Question, how do all of you refer to the events of January 6th? Because I have fallen into the routine of calling it an attempt at insurrection. I've done it here on POTUS. I do it on CNN. What happened on January 6th? My rote response is to say it was an attempt at insurrection. And then finally, pre-show today, I looked up insurrection just to be sure I wasn't loose with the description. Violent uprising against authority or government. Now, does that apply to everybody who was in Washington, you know, on the Mall on January 6th? No, I would say it doesn't. And I'm reading and following as many of these cases as they wind through the judicial system, through the prosecutorial process as I can. And I'm coming away with a conclusion. And I know this is going to be offensive to many of you. I can tell from comments appended to stories on which I'm relying. But many of these are coming across to me as lost souls. To be sure, there were many who were ill-intended. You know, if you had a weapon, if you were dressed in Kevlar or some type of body armor, if you were one of the guys, I don't know what they call that sort of frog march where they're putting a hand. This is a military thing when they put a hand on the guy in front of them and they march in unison. I'm not talking about those guys. I'm talking about the others who maybe didn't even go to the Capitol, but were listening to the president down at the Ellipse. And I'm thinking that many of those are representative of a group of Americans who are, well, they think they're losing their place. I think of that Ben Bradley Jr. book about Luzerne County, Pennsylvania, The Forgotten. And I'm coming to the conclusion, I know I'm generalizing, but I'm coming to the conclusion that for many of them, they found a leader in Trump that they supported, not because of a personal affinity for Donald Trump. I've yet to meet the person who loves Trump. They love what they think that he stands for, and what he stands for mostly is what he opposes. You know, who and what they blame for their personal woes. And I'm thinking about this today because I'm reading the story about the Capitol rioter who walked on the Senate floor on January 6th, who was just sentenced to 8 months in prison. NPR's coverage says this: a Florida crane operator who walked onto the Senate floor during the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol has been sentenced to 8 months in federal prison and 2 years of supervised release. His name is Paul Hodgkins. His sentencing, and this is why it's significant, the first felony case stemming from the deadly assault on the U.S. Capitol by a mob of Trump supporters, it is viewed as a potential bellwether for how other Capitol defendants charged with similar offenses are likely to be treated. He pled guilty last month to a single count of obstructing an official proceeding. On January 6th, he marched from then-President Donald Trump's rally near the White House to the Capitol, where he walked inside and onto the floor of the Senate while carrying a red Trump 2020 flag. In court, Monday he was dressed in a suit, pulled his hair back in a bun, said that he was truly remorseful and regretful for his actions on January 6th. Quote, I say this not because I face consequence, but because of the damage that day's incident caused, the way this country that I love has been hurt, he said to a federal judge named Randolph Moss. He said that he traveled to D.C. from Florida to support Trump, that he had no idea a crowd would later storm the Capitol, said that he got caught up in the passion of the day, entered the Capitol, and walked onto the Senate floor. 8 months in prison is his punishment. Then Dan Zak and Karen Heller have a big piece in the Washington Post today. It is posted most prominently at Smirconish.com. It leads the daily newsletter. It's one of these significant stories, which I think an indication of the impact that it's having is that when I looked at it very early this morning, there were already 4,000 comments appended to it. And the most popular of the comments, I can tell you, show no mercy to anybody who's being charged in connection with January 6th. It begins by talking about a guy named Robert Geiswein, 24-year-old, no criminal history. He's a 3 percenter. On January 6th, he donned goggles, a camouflage shirt, an army-style helmet, military-style vest, reinforced with an armored plate, a black pouch emblazoned with, quote, "My mom thinks I'm special." And then wielding a baseball bat and a noxious spray, he stormed the U.S. Capitol, attacked a federal officer, helped halt the certification of the 2020 presidential election. This is a guy that I think needs to be, this is Michael speaking, severely punished. When I talk about the lost souls who got swept up into something, I'm not talking about someone who came armed, intent on doing destruction at the federal Capitol. But that's one of the stories that gets discussed. And then the Post says this. It says that there are at least 535 people who were somehow involved in the breach on the Capitol, hundreds of ongoing investigations beyond that, according to the FBI director, Christopher Wray. Quote, were these people acting on their most deeply held convictions, or were they somehow not themselves on January 6th? 6 months of evidence, court filings, motion hearings have created a composite sketch of the people arrested in all their treachery or boneheadedness and of the country many said they were fighting for. Some defendants deemed bent on bloodshed were charged with felonies, including conspiracy. Many defendants are charged with misdemeanors, such as disorderly conduct. Their legal defense, it rests on the distinction between causing the chaos and merely being swept up in it. The public defender for Mr. Geiswein said, quote, Mr. Geiswein did not go to any great lengths on January 6th. He simply got in his car, drove to the district, joined an enormous crowd, walked up to the Capitol, encountered what most agree was a light, unprepared, and possibly surprised police resistance at the Capitol, facing that same crowd, many of them riled up by the commander in chief. The insurrection, in other words, has now been deployed as a defense. Mob mentality made them do it. If you believe many of the defense arguments made during the past half year, you might conclude that what happened on January 6th was a brief interruption of collective madness, and that responsibility for the event is spread so thin that true culpability doesn't exist. I parroted the line from the Washington Post story today. Were these people acting on their most deeply held convictions, or were they somehow not themselves on January 6th? That's what's intended by the survey question today. One person I know who represents some of those who got caught up in the events of January 6th is veteran criminal defense attorney William J. Brennan, based in my hometown of Philadelphia. Hey, Billy, thanks so much for coming back to the program.
My pleasure, Michael. Thanks for having me.
As you read that story in the Washington Post, because I know that you have read it, what's your answer to the question? Were they acting on their deeply held convictions, or were they somehow not themselves?
I think the Post came as close as you can to getting it right, but it's the word "they" that I have an issue with. There can't be a blanket approach to the resolution of these now 535, soon to be more cases. Each case has to be judged individually, and that's what federal judges have been doing. A woman was sentenced a few weeks ago. The first felony defendant was sentenced the other day. And if you read some of the comments that these federal judges are making, they're struggling and they're grappling with the offensive acts of January 6th vis-a-vis someone who otherwise led an unblemished life.
Well, Bill, and I'm not asking you to tell, you know, reveal confidences. Obviously, you wouldn't do that. But I get it that they're all each individually different. Are you mostly seeing lost souls as I've described them? And I can tell people will be upset with me even using those words because it sounds defensive. I don't mean it to be. Or are you seeing anarchists?
I'm seeing different things in different cases, but I can tell you an analogy that crossed my mind, and I don't mean to trivialize or minimize the events of 1-6, but it put me in mind of people who tailgate. You know, you put your team's uniform on, you go down to the vet, you put your pickup truck bed down, and, you know, you're fired up for your team, and then all of a sudden fists start flying. You didn't necessarily go down there with that intent, or maybe a more genteel example would be you're going to your niece's wedding, you're looking forward to a pleasant day, you're at the reception, a fight breaks out, and next thing you know, you're throwing chairs. And I think there's a lot of that mental mechanism that applied on 1-6. I think people went to the Ellipse and to the mall to attend a rally or perhaps a protest, and it got out of hand. And that's what judges are grappling with. And frankly, that's what I grapple with as a lawyer involved in some of these cases.
The comments at the Post show no mercy toward any of the people you might be representing. Quote, this is one of the more popular comments. The people justifying all of these excuses for the behavior of these traitors are the same people who had to say about the black teenage boy who gets shot in the back, if only he didn't resist arrest and had listened to the officer. Or another one, I was poor, my mentally ill mother occasionally tried to kill me. I've never tried to overthrow a legitimately elected government, nor assaulted police officers, nor threatened the vice president of the United States. To them, you would say what?
Well, I mean, certainly they're entitled to their opinion, but I've been listening to that type of, you know, I came up hard and I never, you know, fill in the blank, robbed a bank, raped a woman, stole a checkbook. That's a common, you know, self-righteous epitaph that people seem to write the minute somebody else gets in trouble. My thought, having been kind of close up on some of these cases, is we better figure out why the hell this happened so it doesn't happen again. Because it was a very, very dangerous day for our country.
Well, that's kind of where I'm getting to. I mean, do we need to be fearful of a violent resurgence by those who were there or people who weren't there and frankly wish they had been?
I don't think that there's, you know, a round two or wave two or the Delta variant of 1-6 out there. But I do think we should address, as you said in your intro, why people feel forgotten or ignored or cast aside, if that is at the heart of this.
Yeah, I mean, I do want to ask that question, recognizing that even asking it, some will say, is defensive. But no, I mean, don't we ask that when there's crime in the minority community? People want to know, well, why is there black-on-black crime? And what role does a lack of fatherhood have? We're always searching for answers so that we can address it. And in this case, I'm asking the same question, which is, what would cause these individuals to gather that day and for some of them to turn very bloody and violent? That's what I'm asking.
Well, you know, when you mention for the voice out there that will say things like you just opined, they might, you know, it's just offensive to even ask it. Those people have to be put in the corner for a while. This is an important issue that has to be dealt with. I mean, there's a commission to study why this happened, how it happened. It should be really expanded or include a subcommittee where we look at the individuals who have been charged and kind of do a deep dive into them, because these are not easily figure out cases. These are, you know, your neighbor, your brother-in-law, your friend, your former firefighter. I mean, the one guy you mentioned, I think, was a firefighter for years, the one defendant. This is Mr. or Mrs. America here that somehow wound up in the speaker's office. I mean, it's a bizarre ending. I think for some reason when my kids were little and they did those Mad Libs and you fill in the blank and you put in crazy things, if you put in and then I ended up in the rotunda, you know, it's so bizarre it seems almost surreal, but it did happen
again,
and it better not happen again.
I'm drawing a distinction between somebody who went down there hell bent on doing exactly that person I don't have sympathy for, the lost soul mentality. And like this guy, what caused me to want to discuss this is the guy who has now been sentenced to 8 months, who was, you know, photographed on the floor of the Senate with a Trump flag. So he was there. He was one of the people who breached the security of that building. But for what purpose? It seems like he had none in particular.
But if you look at the judge's comments, Michael, as reported in the Post article, the federal district judge had a difficult time reconciling that offensive photograph with the rest of the man's life. And he grappled with it. And the sentence imposed was significantly under the recommended guidelines. The assistant U.S. attorney in the particular case you're referencing asked for more than double the sentence that was imposed. And when the judge issued sentence, he made many comments, including, you know, I'm having a hard time, and I'm paraphrasing, but I'm having a hard time with this because of who you are. And another federal judge spoke for the judiciary and said all of the judges are having a hard time with these cases. And it's because of the issue you're raising. You've got a offensive, horrific act, you know, the building hasn't been breached in 100, 200 years. And it's scary as the world, really, when you look at those videos. It's just frightening to think that that could happen by Americans. So you take that on one end of the far extreme of criminal acts, and then you plug in the defendant, and it's Andy Hardy. It's, you know, the guy was an Eagle Scout. The guy was a firefighter. The guy, you know, lived an unblemished life. So they're tough to reconcile.
Well, at the risk of incurring the wrath of my audience, who will say this is all very defensive of very violent people, I am going to continue forward and have dialogue right now as to what drove them. Should they be painted with a broad brush? And most importantly, parroting from the Washington Post today, were they acting on their most deeply held convictions, or were they somehow not themselves on January 6th? Veteran criminal defense attorney.
Mike, I thought that line about either their treachery or boneheadedness spoke volumes. Whoever wrote that article got it, because that's what this is.
You know what?
You know, it's a hard case to figure out.
You know what? That would have made a much better survey question. Were they treacherous or boneheaded, or both?
Yeah, that jumped off the page. I mean, these two authors really, really get the issue in these cases.
Bill, that was excellent. Thank you so much. I appreciate you allowing us intrude on your day.
Thanks for having me, Michael. Take care.
Veteran criminal defense attorney William J. Brennan.